Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is a Monday afternoon, December 12th, just a couple of weeks away from Christmas. This is the Business Lunch, the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. And on most Mondays, the Inno Boys come by to talk about some new startups and what's going on in the tech world in Chicago. Chicago Inno, I'm talking about. Will Flanagan is here along with Jim Dahlke. Welcome to both of you, fellas. How are
Thanks,
you?
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for having us.
Rewarding weekend for you?
Very good weekend, yes. Yeah.
So you're from New England, so you're used to shoveling. Dahlke, are you still learning?
Not used to shoveling, terrified of it. Luckily, my apartment complex does that.
Really?
But eventually, we'll move into a house, and I'll dread every minute of it.
When you say terrified, I mean you'd hide behind the curtains, or exactly what?
Yeah, make the wife do it, the neighbors, anybody.
The New England trick is you just stomp on it real hard and just pound it right into the pavement so that the pavement becomes basically years and years of snow.
That's kind of the New England trick for everything, isn't it?
Pretty much just pound it into the
pavement. Pound it into the ground, yeah. Okay, so you guys come in with some of the coolest stories and startups and different... I love that it's sort of this marriage between business and technology and creativity. And all of that seems to come together with this company that comes out of Northwestern, where these guys find themselves now sending tweets to professional athletes to tell them to go to bed. What?
Yes, this is a startup called Rise Science, and it was born out of Northwestern from a bunch of students that were actually studying sleep. They didn't sort of hope to build a startup, but a startup sort of came out of their research. And what they sort of focused on was sleep and athletic performance. They found that for every extra hour of sleep an athlete got, they were 8% faster on the field. So they sort of tested this hypothesis with the Northwestern football team. Two really tremendous results. Basically, what their platform did, it was do a lot of data collection around how much sleep they were getting. And then what they would do is tailor schedules to all the players. So everybody needs a different amount of sleep every night. They need to go to bed at a certain hour.
So they came at it with the science of knowing that, right?
Yes.
Not that everyone should
based
get 7 8 hours.
Based on your genetics, based on your schedule, based on your lifestyle, everybody needs a different amount of sleep. You might need 7.5 hours. I might need 7 hours and 50 minutes. So it's all a bit different. So basically what they started to do was built a platform that texted athletes, hey, it's time to wind down, and hey, it's time to go to sleep. And they started to do this, funny enough, manually. So literally, they were in 2013, they were texting Northwestern football players, it's time to go to sleep.
So they were staying up late to text the football players to go to bed.
They had a whole spreadsheet, a whole calendar of when to text which player to this, and it was a really, really funny story.
And the coaches, it sounds like, worked in conjunction with them. I mean, really supported it.
So the coaches loved it because they got to see not only how much sleep their team was getting, but the effect of that and how much better they were performing on the field.
Yeah, and this isn't just like a fun class project. I mean, they're working with the Chicago Bulls, the Jacksonville Jaguars, and they're signing anywhere from $15,000 up to $150,000 annual contracts with these teams. And it's all kind of summed up in this quote from the founder. So you ask, like, okay, this is a fun, quirky startup, but is it working? And what he says is, sleep is the most potent performance-enhancing activity that exists. There's no drug, there's no routine, there's no activity that we've seen that comes close to the type of impact that sleep has.
And they measured it.
And they measured it, and they deploy it. So if you think about, you know, all trainers, every team hires all of these trainers to basically get the most out of your players. And there is a lot of resources spent on professional training. These guys are an extension of that. They've discovered that the best performance-enhancing drug is sleep, and they've built software and technology to make sure that you're maximizing it. Because like exercise, if you're not doing it 100%, you're not getting the most out of it. So you can tell your athletes, hey, man, sleep more. Or you can implement a system that makes sure they're doing
okay,
it.
Okay, I get all that. And, you know, I'm the guy who made fun of the smart football and everything. What do they offer that is more than just a mom saying, hey, go to bed? I mean, you know what I mean? They must have something else that they're offering there.
Exactly. And so basically what they offer is sort of two sides. There's a very tech-driven side. So they've automated the text messages now, so not doing them individually. So it's like, hey, time to go to sleep. And it's tailored to the specific person. But there's also a human component of the kind of coaching they provide. So they literally let players call and talk to them about their specific conditions, right? So the founder was telling me over the phone that he's been on the phone with a Pro Bowl football player's wife about, hey, how can I, my husband get more sleep with a 2-year-old crying child in the house? So really, you're working across the tech side and the human side.
Here's how you do that.
To
you
really
wait.
Tailor somebody's sleep schedule to their specific conditions.
Okay, that's Rise Science, and let's move to Rise Movement, which is, speaking of young kids, right, one of the brains behind Sitter City is now doing this kind of political startup.
Yeah, really interesting story. The City Sitter founder, Sitter City, is a company or startup that matches you with babysitters. So it's kind of a babysitter startup.
I think Genevieve's been on the show before.
Yeah, Genevieve Thiers, longtime founder here in Chicago, done a lot of interesting things. Sort of motivated after the election to sort of jump into politics for the first time. She's never been in politics before, and she's working with an aide of Mayor Rahm Emanuel to launch what they're calling the Rise Movement. And the Rise Movement is a political organization that's trying to address some economic concerns from disenfranchised folks who feel that technology is moving, or that technology is getting rid of a lot of jobs, and that the economic concerns in the country are so overwhelming that their people are worried about losing their jobs from automation.
Yeah, every kind of political movement or party has that hook, has that focus, and that's the focus for them, is job creation in this age of automation. I mean, economists have predicted and estimated that, you know, up to 5 million jobs could be lost due to automation and redundancy in the next 5 years, and that's a big deal.
Sure.
And Genevieve Thiers talked about, you know, what parties need is a common enemy, not for the enemy to be the other. And this loss of jobs due to automation, she sees as one of those enemies. And it's not about, again, stopping progress or stopping disruption. It's about what she referred to as responsible disruption. If you're going to create technology that is going to automate jobs, what are you going to do on the other side? Can we educate those that are maybe losing these jobs to then be the data analysis or the managers of this software?
I don't mean to diminish it. Yeah, but it's almost like if you're going to cut down trees to make paper, you need to plant more trees. Mm-hmm. Right? So if you're going to eliminate jobs here, what are you going to do to reforest the, you know, these families who are losing their jobs?
Exactly.
That's exactly it. And that's a big, complex, complicated question. And her point, the whole point of Rise is, wow, no one's talking about this. So it's cool to see a political movement kind of started like a startup. That's how she's tackling this. So I really enjoyed this story on Chicago Inno because it's tech meets politics.
We'll have to follow that, too. You can read more at ChicagoInno.com. 1221, this is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Will Flanagan, the general manager of Chicago Inno, is here. Jim Dahlke, a writer and reporter for the website as well. So you guys have one big event, the biggest event every year, pretty much, is being part of the Wintrust Business Lunch Christmas show.
That's exactly it.
Christmas, and we're going to record that a little bit later this week. And then the second big thing you do is this 50 on Fire thing.
Yes, no, the appetizer to the big meal, which is our time spent with you, Steve. Yeah, we do 50 on Fire. It's our take on an awards show. And, I mean, man, every day, we're here every Monday. We pitch you more stories than we have time to tell. We're focused on one thing, and that's local innovation. And we are overworked because there's a lot of cool stuff happening here in the city. And this is one way to celebrate and honor them. So we announce in October 150 finalists for 50 on Fire. That's people and organizations that are really heating up the city's innovation economy. And that's not just the most funded startups in the city or the highest paid CEOs. That's professors, that's civic technologists, that's PR professionals who are doing a really good job helping startups tell a story, because a healthy, thriving ecosystem, as cliche as it sounds, is a sum of all of these parts, just the high-profile people.
It is such an exciting, and one of the things, really, that I love about doing this is it's such a great environment where, you know, two Northwestern kids can get a job where they're teaching NBA players how to sleep. And, you know, what it used to be, and I said this before, that, you know, 20, 30 years ago, if you wanted to start a business, you had to open a store or something like that, a hard space. I mean, there's so many things that people can do now in so many different ways. It's got to be hard for you guys to keep up.
It is, but that's the point, and that's why we love what we do. I mean, again, you guys have heard of the Grubhubs, the Groupons, the Braintrees. They're great companies, the Sitter City. But Carrie Shaw with Embody Labs, She's a student at UIUC who is working on virtual reality environments that help doctors learn empathy when dealing with Alzheimer's patients. That's amazing. And there's a lot of those stories that we really love uncovering and celebrating. And the list is on Chicago Inno. It's chock full of them. Again, I really can't signal out one because I wanted to make it 150 on fire. But the guys who make our video who have to cut it down to 50 probably would have killed
me. It's an 18-minute video, Will.
It's already an 18-minute video, so it's really, really long.
But check it out because it's kind of fun to watch, too, at Chicago Inno. And so those are the winners. Okay, so you mentioned that one. Give me one other one that stands out for you.
Well, I'll say this. The really interesting thing about 50 on fire is it is not just 50 companies. I think Will mentioned you mentioned one name. The names on here are so great. I mean, you look at people like Lorena Mesa, who's the data engineer at Sprout Social, just doing really cool things at a really fast-growing company. Even professors like Patrick J. Murphy at DePaul, he's doing really great stuff with entrepreneurship there and with different communities in tech here in Chicago. And so there's an opportunity to highlight people who are doing really fantastic things in tech and in innovation that you don't hear about.
Yeah, and it's also about making sure that people realize that technology doesn't have this exclusiveness on being innovative. Innovation can happen everywhere, which is why we have marketing and advertising firms on here. We also have Hassan Ali, who is the creative marketing director with The Onion, who's doing amazing things. The Onion obviously is really funny, but they're doing really creative things in native advertising to help brands be funnier. He also speaks on a ton of panels in the city. So there's just a lot of people who are being innovative and being great.
We don't talk enough about your newsletter that you guys put out and where you discuss these things most days. Tell people how to find that.
Yeah, sign up for The Beat. It's our daily newsletter. If you enjoy this segment, that's what we do every day. We package everything we do on the site into a newsletter that's wordy and long, and it's basically like this.
It's conversational. It's
Jim, Carson, and I going back and forth in the newsletter.
Okay, so we have a minute left. Tell me, you talk about Christmas miracles. This kid who goes to bed after posting a Rubik's Cube improvement video and wakes up to 1.6 million hits or something.
Yeah,
like that.
I absolutely love it. This is the X Cube. This is Dane Christensen, who's the founder of it. Picture a Rubik's Cube's on steroids. It's a next-gen puzzle game. And we cover a lot of entrepreneurs who want to be entrepreneurs, and they're in search of this idea, and they go to bed thinking, what's going to be my big idea? And then there are entrepreneurs who are just chasing their product, chasing their good idea. He posted the X Cube. And this is 3 years ago, and as he told me, he's been reacting to demand ever since. He didn't want to be a puzzle game maker. It just found him, and I love those entrepreneur stories as well.
And so you can read more about him as well at Chicago Inno. A crazy story. All right, we're going to take a break. I think you guys are the ones who first told me that the Dollar Shave Club has like 20% of the razor market in the country.
Crazy how fast they've grown.
It just still astounds me. We're going to talk to the chief marketing officer of Dollar Shave Club coming up in the second half hour. Boys, great to see you. And we'll record our very Inno Christmas, which really, it's almost like fruitcake. It's become a tradition. this is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Randy Schaefer is the digital news editor for the Chicago Tribune, and she joined. Is that new?
Yes, it is. As of 2 weeks ago, a digital news editor.
Very
there
nice.
Are a few of us. So, yeah, thank
are you.
You
the best? Probably you're the best, don't you think?
Are the best? I think you'd have to ask my boss for that, for his consensus on that one.
Well, I don't think we will. We'll just go with it. Randy comes by most Mondays to talk about the trends, what's new in social media, and all. I was talking to Bill and Wendy before the show about the story of the Oakland fire victim, which is, well, it's just a sweet thing, and I don't want to say it's what's great about social media, but it is a really nice Facebook story. Explain it for me.
Yeah, it is really cool to every once in a while get one of those really, really heartfelt, touching stories out of social media. Social media can be a bit of a beast sometimes, but this story is really a great example of how awesome it can be. Most people heard about the Oakland warehouse fire that happened last week. Several people lost their lives, unfortunately, and one of those people was Griffin Madden, who was the boyfriend of a girl named Saya Tomika, I believe. But anyway, these two went on a vacation to Times Square in New York City more than about a year and a half ago, and had their photo taken by a street photographer.
So when I was reading it at first, I didn't quite get it, but it's just some guy who takes pictures.
Yeah.
Sort of professionally on the street.
Yeah, just kind of grabs photos of people in passing and posts them on an Instagram Instagram account for all the world to see. And so these two had their photo grabbed by this guy, and the girl never bothered to grab a copy of it, didn't ask for the photographer's name. But unfortunately, after her boyfriend lost his life in the fire, she realized she really wanted a copy of that photo. So she kind of put out a call on Facebook and said, hey, can anyone help me find this photo? And sure enough, the internet collectively got together and helped find the street photographer who took that photo of her and her boyfriend. And it's a very, very touching photo.
That's
the two
a sweet
of them
story, yeah.
Kissing in Times Square.
And the photographer kind of was made aware of it, and he's like, well, it might have been me, it could have been me, and he had 200,000 pictures to go through.
Yeah, went through all of them to try to help this girl out, and very touching story.
Speaking of pictures to go through, I logged on to Facebook, I think, last week and got my year in review.
Yep, that it is the time of year for those.
Have you seen that yours yet?
I have seen mine, but I have not watched mine. I know it's there. I don't particularly want to look back at this year.
Well, here's what freaked me out a little bit. I am mostly active on Facebook professionally. You know, I use it for people who listen to the show or people who do travel or things like that. And so when I saw my year in review, I had the great pictures of my kids and my wife. But then also, if there were people that I would click on to sort of research, like if someone was stalking my Facebook posts or whatever, right? All of a sudden, their pictures were in my year in review, and I'm like, I can't share this.
Right. Yeah, some people have been reporting this weird glitch with Facebook bringing up old photos from years past, so I hope your hair looked as good in 2006 as it does now.
I looked better back in 2006.
Well, then it's not a problem for you.
So what is it about that? So these old pictures are coming up and being reposted on people's timelines?
Yeah, Facebook updated its iOS app last week, and a few people have been reporting these glitches, just old photos showing up as new posts in their timeline. And a lot of users, and this actually happened to me. I've hit it, not the photo thing, but another glitch, where I've actually unfollowed a bunch of people. I'm still friends with people, but their posts don't show up in my timeline. I like to keep it mostly news and close family friends. And they all started reappearing on my timeline. And I was really confused as to what was happening, but it appears that this is kind of just a glitch that happened with Facebook's new update.
Is it a glitch that they are fixing?
I hope so.
Okay, and so and there's another story that you brought in about millennials and the way they're collecting news, you know, because everyone's talking. You and I talked weeks ago about this whole fake news thing and the guys in Macedonia, right? Was that you and I talking about the guys in Macedonia?
Sounds about right.
And I was watching last week on the show, Willie Geist was on, the host of Sunday Today, and they did a piece yesterday about these guys in Macedonia writing these fake news stories. I don't know how I got there. Oh, because it's about how millennials now take in their news and how different it is than us. Now, they are claimed to be informed, but they're not reading newspapers, right?
Right. Millennials are actually, they're just as informed, if not more informed than, I guess my generation is just as informed, if not more informed than your generation. We just happen to get our news from social media. No surprise there.
Well, right, so you're not going to subscribe to a newspaper, but that doesn't mean you're not going to be reading newspaper stories.
Right, and part of that is that millennials like to get their news from people they know. You know, your generation, you might like having a Dan Rather or an Anderson Cooper. My generation, we tend to trust our friends, so we tend to look and see what our friends are sharing.
Randy, I tend to trust my friends, too.
Well, not saying you don't, but...
Right, okay, so, but that's fair enough, so that when someone might sit down to watch the evening news and someone that they trust to deliver that, be it Anderson Cooper or Rachel Maddow or whomever, millennials, you people, are getting news stories shared among yourselves.
Yeah, we want to see what our friends have to say. And kind of what you said about sitting down to watch the evening news, that's another thing that your generation did that mine didn't. You would sit down and you would make time in the morning to read the paper and to watch the evening news. We get our news more integrated into our lives. We see it as we're commuting on social media, on Facebook, or we see it on Twitter as we're, you know, walking down a hallway. Hopefully we don't run into people while we're doing the walking. But.
Well, okay, so tell me, I want to flesh out a little bit about this idea that you get it from your friends. You trust your friends, so that means they're sharing stories.
Right. I know personally on my newsfeed, I see a lot of my friends are very, very politically minded, and so they're sharing stories. And a lot of them kind of like seeing the validation that comes from sharing these stories that their friends are also sharing, and knowing that, hey, Dakota Access Pipeline, this is a cool story that people are really, really into. My friends care about it, so maybe I should care about it.
But isn't that part of the danger, that if you're only reading news stories that your friends are sharing...
You're falling into that bubble.
tend to be, right? If they're your friend, they tend to see things maybe in the world the way you do, and so you're sort of limiting yourself.
Absolutely.
So how do you get around that?
You visit a news site, read the newspaper.
Well, one of the other things they said is that the millennials actually are exposed to different viewpoints, that they tend to click on and read a little bit further.
Yeah, and this is actually, I found this really interesting because this is something that, and this is a Forbes story, by the way, this is something that was very contradictory to what we've been hearing a lot of about how millennials do live in their little bubbles because all of their Facebook friends tend to agree with their viewpoints. And so I thought it was very interesting that Forbes actually reported that millennials are more likely to be exposed to opposing viewpoints than your generation.
Well, I like that, and that's encouraging because, you know, people go home and they watch Fox or they watch MSNBC, you know, and they get their news from that and then not the other side. They think the other side is stupid. So it's good to see that millennials maybe are...
Kind of buck that trend a little bit, I guess.
We'll see if it happens. All right, tell me about, speaking of following the news and following your own side, tell me about Gab.
Gab is a somewhat new social media site. It's actually in beta testing, so there's not really much to it right now. But Gab is kind of becoming the hub of the alt-right. Gab is, it's a growing platform. It's actually, because it's still in beta, there's only about 130,000 users and a huge waiting list. But this site says that it will never censor anything. And
well, so which means it could be absolutely patently, clearly a lie.
Full of fake news, trolls, inflammatory behavior, threats. Gab's not going to get rid of it. And so
why not?
It just doesn't want to. It's kind of making its place in the social media sphere for that. You know, some of the air quotes big social sites, they crack down on hate speech, they crack down on threats, and a lot of people don't like that. And so Gab is trying to appeal to those people who they want to make that hate speech. They want to talk about those kind of offbeat topics.
And they're doing it by saying that they are champions of freedom and free speech.
Yep.
And that the readers are smart enough to know what's fake and what's not.
That's what they're hoping, so.
What's been the evidence in the past? Have we noticed that people are smart enough to know what's fake and what's not?
Well, no, we actually have not. A lot of reports have said that people are kind of struggling to see that balance, students and people of your generation alike.
There's a quote from one of the guys behind it, Sanduja, who says, "We don't see human beings as sheep. We trust them. We trust their ability to understand things they can discern. Reality from distortion." Well, we'll see, won't we?
We definitely will see.
Randy Schaefer is a digital news editor at the Chicago Tribune. Nice to see you again. Thanks for coming by.
Yeah, you too. Thank you for having me.
And with any luck at all, I'll be in your year in review next year.
Hopefully, yes.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Hi, I'm Mike, founder of DollarShaveClub.com. What is DollarShaveClub.com? Well, for $1 a month, we send high-quality razors right to your door. Yeah, a dollar. Are the blades any good? No, our blades are f***ing great.
And do you think your razor needs a vibrating handle, a flashlight, a back scratcher, and 10 blades? Your handsome ass grandfather had one blade and polio.
Looking good, pop up!
We are DollarShaveClub.com, and the party is on.
12:52, it's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN, and that was from the video in 2012 that really set it all off, the Dollar Shave Club, which dominates the subscription services when it comes to shaving in this country and really set the trend for many other subscription services. Adam Weber is the CMO of Dollar Shave Club, and he joins us now on a phone line. Adam, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
So you were there in 2012, right? You've been there since day one.
Not exactly since day one. I joined a little bit after that the video that you just heard launched. But I definitely saw the exciting aftermath from the video taking off virally.
That's too bad, Adam. I was going to give you all the credit for the video.
Unfortunately, I can't take it, but thank you.
Tell me about Dollar Shave Club's share of the market when it comes to razors in this country.
That's a great question. We, you know, in just 4 short years, we've taken on about 17% of the cartridge market share. In the U.S. And largely we've done that, I think, with an exciting proposition to the consumer. It's just really simply laid out. We deliver affordable razors to men for a fraction of the price of the market equivalent, which is Gillette, the main player in the space. Their quality, they deliver on their promises, and they're conveniently delivered on subscription.
It's an amazing thing to me that when you consider the fact that whether you're going into a Walgreens or CVS or wherever, all the different ways to buy razors, 17% of us get it in the mail from the Dollar Shave Club. I got to tell you, too, Adam, I'm a new subscriber. I subscribed just a few months ago. After we were talking about the market share, I figured if you've got 17%, things must be going right for you. You must be doing something right. And I'm now giving it as a gift for Christmas.
Amazing. win. I think that's awesome. It's actually a great gift. It's one that I've actually given out to a lot of the guys that are in my family and friends, because it's a gift that keeps on giving, and it's super practical, and it's one that guys tend to like.
Is it a gift? I mean, is Christmas a big time for you guys?
Oh, it's huge. We have a brand new gifting kit that you can get right alongside a new travel bag, a DOP kit that we launched just this past year. And it comes right alongside with an ongoing subscription that you can get, whether it's on a 3, 6, or even 12-month recurring nature.
All right, tell me about this whole subscription business. I mean, I'm sure you look at other companies as well, and Dollar Shave Club certainly has been a trendsetter to it. Is it growing, or do you guys reach a sort of a saturation point where there's too many such-and-such of the month subscription services?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. I don't know that we think of ourselves through the lens of being a subscription company. Yes, that's ultimately what we deliver, but we look at ourselves as a razor and a grooming company. And that category is huge, and it's a category that most men partake in some way, shape, or form. and subscription, at the end of the day, is just a means of delivering it in a more convenient way.
Okay, but so that's...
That category is not necessarily a limiting factor. We've seen it grow as we've started to raise awareness of the benefits of subscription.
I'm interested because we had the people on from Birchbox last week, and it seems to me that Birchbox, what they want to do is they give you a kit each month of little samples that drives you back to their website to buy bigger things or to buy more things. That's really not the way it works at Dollar Shave Club, right? What you're getting in the mail is kind of what you guys are trying to sell to us.
Yeah, it works for us because we're not trying to help guys necessarily discover a lot of new solutions. Our subscription is much more need-based. And so, razors are a product that guys use every day. They go through them frequently, and they run out, and that's super frustrating for them. And that's why subscription works, because it makes it a lot easier for them to get the products that they use all the time.
All right, so we started with the video and marketing when it comes to this product. You said that video really is kind of the heartbeat of all of it. Tell me how the use of video in marketing has changed since 2012 when this phenomenal video came out.
Well, I would say first and foremost, video for us is all about storytelling. The reason why we love video is because we think the best way to bring resonant ideas to the consumer is to tell a great story, and video allows for that. And I think that's what we launched on, and we continue to do that over and over and over. If you were to go to our YouTube page, you'd see an array of videos ranging from what you saw at launch, everything down to a video that we just launched about our new DOP kit traveler bag. Some of them are long, some of them are short. They all tell a great story, and I think that's actually what's changed in the marketing landscape, is that most of the social platforms in 2011, 2012 weren't necessarily set up structurally for mobile video. And you really see the likings of Facebook and Snapchat to really help drive video consumption in much more easier to consume and on-the-go ways. And we've had to really focus our storytelling to adapt to those channels.
Adam Weber is the CMO of Dollar Shave Club. Adam, are you clean-shaven or do you have a beard?
I am clean-shaven and always... irritation-free and feeling great.
Well, look, it was great to talk to you. I appreciate it, and I hope we can do it again sometime.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, and happy holidays.
You bet. It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN.